Daf Nun Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're up to Nema Kitanoi, which would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom of Daf Nun Amud Aleph. And our subject is to transform or convert a chifetz that's mukta, even mukta machmas gufo, into something that's muchan, and it's a non-mukta object. And the question is, do we require a maisa? For example, in the case of Chario Shel Dekel, we had these date palms, and he wants to convert them from mukta into a chair for yeshiva. Do we require the maisa of kshira to tie them together? Or is enough that he's miyached them for Shabbos use, and he designates them for such? And possibly, we don't even need that he designates himself. There was a third possibility, Ravasi, and that was that all we need would be a maisa to use it on one occasion, even not for the sake of Shabbos. And as an introduction to the next Gemara about Lema Kitanoi, let's mention the following. In the case of Meleches Memachek, which we're going to get to now, the last Gemara that we had, let's just review, was Machnis Adam Moloi Kupaso Ofar. That was when he wanted to designate the dirt on the ground for use. He wants to cover something that has to be covered. And the Gemara said that he needs to set up a keren zavis, meaning he should make sure that he wants to be miyached this particular corner of his house or his yard, and he wants to use that afar. And the Gemara thought that would certainly prove the shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel, that all you need is yichud b'machshava. And the Gemara says, no, that could work out even according to Rabbanon. Ad kan lo kami Rabbanon to be in maisa, el midi de bar avidi maisa. Avol midi lav bar avidi miyavid ba maisa lo. So in the case of Ofar, where there's no maisa that you do with the Ofar, you just need the Ofar as is in its natural state, it could be that even the Rabbanon would agree that you don't need an action. All you need is, like Rav Shimon Gamliel holds, to be miyachid v'machshav, and that's sufficient. And that was the last thing we said. Now the Gemara says, Neime ketanoi. Should we say, we had a psak earlier on this daf of Amar Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of Kupa Shel Afar, and all you needed was machshav bilvad. Should we say that this statement, this ruling of Rabbi Yehuda, to be matir, a kupa shall offer through yichud al yidei machshava bilvad, is a matter of a machlokes tanoim. And in general, it's not usual for amoraim to argue about something that was already taught as machlokes tanoim. And then he could say halacha kitana ploni, they could paskin, but to say that it's an ancient machlokes, that's a little strange that they wouldn't make any reference to that machlokes. And the Brisa says, Bakol chofin es hakelim. You're allowed to rub utensils, even on Shabbos itself, in order to sharpen them up, letzachzeach otam. And this shifshuf, this rubbing, is mutar b'chol dover chutz mi kli kesef b'graskon. The only exception is the case of silver utensils. You're not allowed to rub them with a kind of an offer, which is a product of chavios yayin, of barrels of wine. And what we're talking about are the sediments of wine, and it's something in English, it's called tartar, the deposit that forms in barrels of wine. And since silver is a very relatively soft metal, if you apply this tartar and you rub it, it scrapes the silver, let's say the top layer of the silver, very smooth. And that's a violation of Meleches Memachek, which is one of the 39 Melechas, and it's called smoothing in English, to smooth it out. However, the Brisa seems to imply that if you're not using this particular kind of tartar, this kind of garticon, let's say, for example, HaNeser V'chol, if you would use something called Neser, or something called sand to shine your silver, that would be mutter. And this thing called Neser, in the Hebrew translation, he says min adama. It's something also that comes from the earth, like chol, which is sand. And it's used menakim ba kelim, to clean utensils. And that's mutter, because that's not gorer the kesef. It doesn't actually remove any surface level, scrape the silver. And the Gemara asks for asanya, but we have another brisa, and that says neser v'chol osur l'shavshipem. You're not allowed to use these earth or the sand in order to smoothen out the surface of a silver keli. So it seems that there's a machlokes tanoim. Are you allowed to be m'shavshipem? Are you allowed to rub clay kesef, silver utensils, with something called neser and chol, two types of earth? The Braisa doesn't give us any clue as to what they're arguing about. So the Gemara suggests the following possibility. Maybe they're arguing about yichud muktza in something that's not a bar maisa. Maila bahaka miflagi. Shouldn't we assume that the iser here is not the girud of the kesef, it's not the scraping off of the top layer of the silver, because again, he's not using this substance called tartar, which is in the Aramaic language called garticon. So everybody agrees he's not violating Meleches Memachek. And rather, the machlokas is with regard to Yichud Muktza. And these items, these materials called Neser and Chol, Muktza Mach Maskufo, in and of themselves intrinsically Muktza. And he brought into his house on Erev Shabbos a kupa, an entire, a basket full of Neser and Chol. And he poured it onto the ground of his house. Demar, Sover, according to that Tana, who prohibits scraping and rubbing the clay kesef with these substances, he holds that it's not enough to be Miyached Chol and make it into muktzah. Chol, sand, and this neser is certainly intrinsically muktzah. Yichud, designating, is not enough. Being in Maisa, we have to go beyond that. Like the case in the Tanakam, in the case of Churiel Sheldeka, we required Kshira. Here also, we need a Maisa. But there's no Maisa that you could do with neser v'chol to change them and prepare them for shifshuf. And therefore, it's also betiltal. You haven't succeeded through any action in changing the status of this mukta object. Umar Sover, but the other Tana that's quoted in the first Brisa, who implies that you're allowed to scrape and rub your kli kesef, your silver, with neser and chols, he holds lobin and maisa, which would reflect that shita that we attributed to Ravasi, that you don't need an action to change the status and remove the status of muktza. And the Gemara assumes that, again, as we said before, there's no iser memachik. The whole issue here is only muktza. And if the person had done a maisa, somehow he had brought a basket full of neser or sand into his house and he did a maisa with it, you know, there is no maisa, but if he theoretically could, then there would be no muktz issue, and it would be mutter. Here he only set it aside, he put it in a certain spot, but is that enough to remove, to be mafkia, the status of muktza? And according to Rav Papa's interpretation of the previous brisa, we said that even the Rabbanon would agree that in something that doesn't lend itself to a maisa, then you can change a mukta status and render it non-mukta. No act is possible here, and the item should not be mukta. If it does remain mukta, then the explanation that we had before of Rav Papa is really dependent upon machlokes tanoim. Again, if not for Rav Papa's statement, afilu teimik rabbanon ad kan lo kamir rabbanon divinu ma'aso midi debara vidi b'ma'aso midi lo bara vidi ma'aso lo, we could have said that this machlokes in the two brises is simply machlokes between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that all you need is yichud b'machshava, and that removes mukta, and that would apply here to the case of neser and chol. Whereas the Rabbanan hold, no, you need a Maisa. But now in light of Rav Papa's reinterpretation of the Rabbanan, and even the Rabbanan agree that where there's no act possible, then all you need is Yichud Machshava, then we have to assume that this point of Rav Papa is really a Machlokes Tanoim. So the Gemara says, lo, the Gemara rejects. The Kuli Amalo Be'inin Maisa. Everyone agrees that we don't need a Maisa. At least in this case, where it doesn't lend itself to a ma'aseh. V'lo kasha ha'rab Yehuda v'ha'rab banan v'ha'rab Yishimon. The issue here between the two brises is the famous universal issue of Dorashenim Eskamin. That the brisa that prohibits this and says you're not allowed to be mishafshe, you can't rub your silver utensils with neither neser nor chol, that brisa reflects the shita of Yehuda, the Omar Dovashani Miskavin also. And in fact, he's going to do an act of memachik, which can be achieved even in the case in silver utensils, even in the case of Neser V'chol. And that's being Megaris HaKelim, and that's memachik. And that's the brisa that asks it. V'ha Kirevi Shimon, the brisa that allows it, in the case of Neser and Chol, reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, the Omer Dovah Shenim Eskavein Mutter. And in the case of Shifshuf, of Kli Kesef, where he's rubbing them, it depends what he's rubbing them with. If he's rubbing them with Gartikon, which we said was tartar, even Rabbi Shimon would agree it's Osir, because that's already a psikration. There's no question that he's going to achieve Lagaris HaKelim to be Mamachik them, to smoothen them out. But in the case of Neser and Chol, maybe yes, maybe no. And since he's not Miskavin, he's not trying to scrape off the surface of the silver, therefore it's Mutter, according to Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara immediately asks the question, "V'mayu kim to loha deshari, that price which allows you to be mishafshef with neser and chol, you say reflects the shita Reb Shimon, name is seifa." Let's read the seifa, that very same price. It says, "Aval lo yachuf bohem si'oro," he should not be shampooing his head with neser or chol, and apparently Neser and Chol, if you rub your hair with them, is a kind of shampoo that removes the hair. Now, why should this be also? I mean, he has no intention to remove his hair. Ve'i Rabbi Shimon, if this brisa is authored by Rabbi Shimon, Mishrish Kashari, the brisa should have reflected a kula. Why does it say at the end of the brisa that lo yachuf bem siro? Why not? It's a dover shenim miskavim. This not, I'll prove to you that it's a dover shenim miskavim from Mishnah and Nazir and Daf Membeis. And here we turn to Daf Nun Membeis here in Masech to Shabbos. Nazir chofef umefasfes avalo sorek. Now, with regard to Nazir, there is an isur of Tiglachas Nazir, a person took upon himself a neder to be a Nazir, Hareni Nazir. So during the period of Nazirus, he has three Surim that are all indicated in Parshas Naso and Sefer Bamidbar. He's not allowed to be Metamel Mesim, he's not allowed to drink wine or anything that comes out of the Geffen, any product of the grapes. and Stam Naziris is Shloshim Yom, 30 days. And the final Isur is Tiglachas. He's not allowed to remove his hair. Again, there are cases, by the way, of Nazir Olam, just on the side. If he accepts upon himself a longer period than 30 days, that he can certainly do. And at the end of his period of Naziris, he brings three Korbanos, an Ola, a Chatos, and a Shlomim. That's a Keves, a Kivsa, and an Ayil. And he brings 20 chalos that have to be baked solas. And after he brings his karbonos, then he has to cut off all his hair. His hair is brought with a carbon shlomim, and it's burnt on the fire. And all this the Rambam summarizes at the beginning of Hilchos Nazirus. Now, one of the surim, as we said before, is Tiglachas. The pasuk says, "Kol yumei neder nizro tar lo yavral rosho." And our Mishnah Nazir wants to clarify the din of chafifas haseir when he shampoos his hair, and he rubs his hair and let's assume that he's allowed to rub his hair with chol and neser, and that's called mefasfes. Avalo sorek, but he's not allowed to comb his hair. So we see clearly from this Mishnah that neser and chol will not, it's not a psik ratio, not inevitably remove his hair. So he might inadvertently remove his hair. And according to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, since he does this unintentionally, it should be perfectly mutter. Why does the Mishnah say in Nazir, Avalo Sorek, having been matir, chafifa with neser and chol, if we assume so, why is it also to comb his hair? The answer is, in combing, it's inevitable. He'll definitely remove his hair, and that's called a psik ratio. Reb Shimon would be moda. But in neser and chol, that's not a psik ratio. And therefore, if we swing back to the discussion about the brisa of Shabbos, and the brisa says, lo yochuf bahen siaro, that he's not allowed on Shabbos to use the neser or the sand, the chol, to shampoo his hair. Well, why not? It's not a psik resha, right? It's mutter for a nazir. And we're holding now that this brisa is authored by Rabbi Shimon. So why shouldn't this be permitted on Shabbos according to Rabbi Shimon, since the Dovah Sheinu Miskaven? And based on this kasha, the Gemara actually changes its opinion and rejects its previous position. So again, looking back at the bottom of Nun Amud Aleph, Amos Seifa, Avalo Yochuf Bohen, that you're not allowed to do this shampooing of your hair with Neser and Chol as Siyaro B'Shabbos, because he's going to remove his hair. And exactly what would be the Malacha of removing hair? We're not exactly sure if that's Malachas Gozes. Let's assume it's Malachas Gozes. And now the Gemara wants to backtrack and assume that this brisa reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Elahava ha Rabbi Yehuda he. In other words, the brisa that allows you to rub your clay kesef with neser and chol reflects the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and that's mutter. And yet, there's another brisa that says it's asur. Both brises reflect the shita. Trei tanoi alibed Rabbi Yehuda, but there are two tanoim who have a dispute about how to interpret the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Hai tana, one tana that says that it's mutar al ibn Rabbi Yehuda Savar Garir. No, I'm sorry. The Tana that says it's also, I meant to say, says Garir, that there is a possibility that he might scrape off the top layer of his clay kesef, and therefore he would violate the Isur of Memachek. Kaitana Alibid Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana and that Bryce that says that you're allowed to use Neser or Chol, he holds low Garir. It will not scrape the utensil. There's not even a Chashash that will do so. It's not possible. And therefore, it's Mutter. If there's a possibility, that would reflect the Tana of the Brice that says you're not allowed to use this. So honestly, if we were learning more Pe'irin, we would have to figure out what is the nature of this Machlokas to Tanoim Alibid Rabbi Yehuda, whether or not Neser and Chol will scrape. Is there a possibility that it might scrape off the surface of the silver utensils? Not. Is it inevitable? Is it not inevitable? You know, it's a machlokas b'mitzius. It seems that there should be some deeper meaning to this machlokas. So haitan alibid Rabbi Yehuda Savar Garir. There is a possibility that'll scrape off the surface of the silver. Haitana alibid Rabbi Yehuda Savar Lo Garir. There's no possibility, and therefore we don't have to worry about the possibility of a molocha of mamachek and a tovashenim iskami. So Gemara now asks the kasha b'mai ukimta ki Rabbi Yehuda. We're not out of the clear, because even if you interpret the brayso also according to Rabbi Yehuda Maseifa, let's look at the last part of the first brayso, which permits using neser and chol. It says avoponov yada v'raglov mutar. Now apparently, Neser and Chol can also sometimes remove human hair from a face. And therefore, the question is, are you allowed to wash your hands, your face, your feet, and use these substances, these materials, that would remove the hair? Hama Aber Sear. He's going to, these agents remove hair from the face. And how could Rabbi Yehuda possibly allow such a thing, even if you'll tell me he's not miskaven to remove the hair, but nevertheless, Dovah Shedim miskaven according to Rabbi Yehuda is also. If we would have said that the Braisa reflects the Shita of Shimon, so even if you'll tell me that as a result of washing his head, there's a possibility that he will loosen hair, and therefore washing the head, you know, or we call it shampooing, would be forbidden, and washing the hair could be permitted because maybe that's less of a psikresha. But once we interpret the brisa according to Rabbi Yehuda, then lechora, washing the face, even if it's not a psikresha, it's not inevitable, but nevertheless, the possibility is that it'll remove the hair, and that should be also. So how could the Braisa say, avoponav yodav raglav mutar? So Gemara gives three answers. Iboy seima b'katan. You're talking about a child who doesn't have facial hair. Iboy seima isha. A woman generally doesn't have facial hair. Iboy seima b'saris. And the Saris, who had some sort of surgical operation, and he sort of doesn't have male hair, so there's no, in all these cases, no facial hair, and that's why it's mutter. I mean, here we have to ask the question, in these three cases, what's the chiddush of the braisa? Arei poshut shemutter lem lochuf pneihem. There's no chash of removing sayar if there's no sayar at all. So you're going to have to say it's what you call agav urcha. You know, once the braisa told you that where there is a possibility of removing sayar, like shampooing the hair, you have to be very careful about that because Rabbi Yehuda holds the Rosh Hashanah is coming as asur. So the braisa tells you, but in these cases, it certainly is mutter. And the Ritva adds here a point that there might have been a hava mina, then maybe we should make an absolute gzera anytime there's a possibility of removing sayer for, let's say, a man, So even a woman and a child, etc., would not be allowed to use these substances as soap, you know, to clean their hands and their face and their feet. Now there's a discussion here as to why the Gemara actually had to enumerate three different answers to this question. Katan, Ishan, Saris. And it could be that each one has a certain weak point. If you're talking about Katan, that's Dochuk. To say that Yochuv ben Saro is referring to a Katan, that he's not allowed to shampoo his hair with this sand, but he's allowed to clean his face. You know, it sounds like a person is doing this on his own. It doesn't sound like we're talking about a Katan. The Teretz of Ish is also a little bit weak, because it says Lo Yochuv Beloshen Zachar. And in general, to say that we make a gzera on a saris, that he shouldn't wash his hair as a havamina, because he might be, you know, if we watch the saris, then other people might be making even anoshim. That's also a bit of a weak svar. So the Gemara offers three answers. Each one has a plus and a minus. Now, there are other types of agents that could be used for washing on Shabbos, and the question is whether or not you're allowed to use them. Omar of Yehuda, Afar Levensa Shari. Now, Levena is a brick, and Afar is an Avka, otherwise known as a powder, and it's crushed brick substance that makes a powder. And apparently, it has also kind of a propensity to remove hair, this powdered brick. Now the question is, are you allowed to use it on Shabbos, let's say, over your face, and it might remove the beard hairs of your face? And Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter. You're allowed to wash your face on Shabbos with these powdered brick substances. And he doesn't have to worry about removing beard hairs, even though he has a beard. And apparently we're talking about a case where, let's say if we go according to Rabbi Shimon, it's a Dover Shein Miskaven, even if we remove the hair, and it's not a Psik Reisha. Om Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, Kusfa diyasmin, which in Hebrew is translated as Psoles Shumshamin, sesame pulp, is shari, is also allowed for shampooing his hair, and we don't assume he'll remove hair. Amar Rava Rava adds another category, another material, afar pilpule shari, that's avkas pilpulem shchukim, and we're talking about crushed pepper. And now Rav Sheshes adds another material, which is called barda, Omar of Sheshes, barda shari. So we don't know exactly what barda is, the Gemara says, my barda. So now we're talking about a taroves, the Rambam says in Hilchos Shabbos Perikov Beis, a taroves, a mixture of two different materials. One is a Dover HaMashir Seir that takes off the hair, and the other is Dover She'eno Mashir Seir, that's called Barda. Omar of Yosef, this Taroves is made up of Tilsa Ahola, Tilsa Asav, and Tilsa Sigli. So one third of the ingredients is what we call Ahola. Ahola is the Shoresh, it's the root of an Asav, of some sort of a grass, and the root of that grass is called Ahohel, or Ahal, and it's used to whiten things and to make things sparkle, and it also is removed, it's used to remove hair. And that's called one shlish, one third. And in English, this ala is called aloes, aloes. And again, it's used to remove hair. Tilsa asa, asa is a myrtle, otherwise known as a hadas, as we know it. And one third is sigale, And sigale is also a kind of a grass, something that grows. Min esev, sheyesh lo shlosha olim, it has three leaves to it. Some say it's violets in English. And Rav Shesha says that this barda you're allowed to use to wash your face on Shabbos. If it would have more of this ahal, this aloes, then you would not be allowed to use it for a shampoo, because then it would certainly remove the hair. But if it has up to a third, then it's okay. The Gemara brings another opinion here. Omer Rav Nechemya Bar Yosef, Kol Hecha Deleka Ruba Ahala Shapir Dami. You don't need a maximum of a third of Ahala. It's enough as long as you have 50% or less. So if you don't have a rove, a majority of this shoresh, of this root called Allah, then even though it's more than a third, it's not going to remove the hair from your head, and you're allowed to use it as a shampoo. Now at this point, the Gemara wants to know about other questions of Hilchos Shabbos that have to do with what's called crushing food. Boy, my name is Rav Sheshes. The question came in front of Rav Sheshes. Ma'ol liftzoh zeisim b'Shabbos. Are you allowed to crush olives on a sela, on a stone on Shabbos, and that sweetens up the olives and takes out the bitterness of the olive? And the question is, we have an Easter on Shabbos which is called Tikkun Ochlim. And Tosus Dibra Maskel Mahu, in trying to clarify Rashi, says that we have a problem here of Tikkun Ochlim. And the Gemara later on in Kufnun Hey records Machlokes Amoraim with regard to preparing food for animals. Rav Huna holds that if it's not edible and you make it edible, that's called a molid, and that's prohibited. You have machshir the object for achila, to make it prepared for food. Now, according to the Shita Rav Huna, even after it is already roy, it's suitable for food, and now you want to make it even more beautiful, you're allowed to put in that extra effort, that extra tircha. Rav Yehuda holds that if it's a dovar shena royal achila, then we'll allow you to do whatever you have. But once it's royal achila, to put in all that tircha in order to be misakin it and make it even better, that's prohibited. And now the Gemara offers a suffix in the case of crushing olives, and this suffix could apply to each one of the shitas. Is this called asiyas ochel? Is it called tikkun ochel? Omalahu, and Rav Sheshes responded, you know what, instead of asking me about this din as far as Shabbos is concerned, why don't you ask me if you're allowed to do this on a weekday? Are you allowed to crush olives for the sake of sweetening them by smashing them on a stone during the week? Because Rav Sheshes held that this should be also even during the week. And the reason for that is Mishum Hefsed Ochlin. You are destroying food. And Hefsed Ochlin is Osir even during the week. You're wasting food because a good deal of the olives will go Le'ibud. And even though you're doing it for the overall benefit for the olives in the terms of eating them and they become sweeter, but nevertheless there's an Isur of Hefsed Ochlin. And that Isur is an absolute Isur, which applies even if you have some sort of purpose in mind. It's considered Hefsed Ochlin. So the Gemara clarifies this issue about Hefsed Ochlin. Lema Pliga de Shmuel, shall we assume that Rav Sheshes, who's more machmir about Ptsiyas Zesim, and he's worried about the prohibition of wasting food, that's against Shmuel. The Amar Shmuel, Osa Adam called Tzarko B'Pas. Person can use a loaf of bread any way he wants to. For example, he could be mefarit, he could break it down into small little crumbs, lam choso, and he wants to use it in a tavshil, make it into breadcrumbs. And it seems, according to this Havmi in the Gemara, that Shmuel would be matir even taking zesim and crushing them. So the Gemara says, no, that's no proof from Shmuel, Amri. There's no machlokas between Shmuel and Rav Sheshes, because pas lo me'isa. When you take a loaf of bread and you, let's say, make crumbs out of it, breadcrumbs, that's not making the bread repugnant. He's doing it for his purpose. He wants to use it in his tavshil. And that's not an insult of wasting food. It's still edible. But honey, in the case of zesim, me'isi. In other words, that which you take out of the zesim, the mashke azov, the liquid that you they extract from the zesim by smashing them on the stone, that's completely wasted. That's completely gone. And that's why Rav Sheshes holds that it's asur, even though it benefits him, you know, because he now has zesim that are sweeter, and he removes the bitterness. So Shmuel was only matir in the case of crushing a loaf of bread. And the reason for that is that even though it might be a little bit of a bizayon to Oakland, but it's not me'isa. In a case of completely being mafsid Oakland, as in the case where the liquids from the olives will not be, you know, that those juices that are discharged of the olives are considered totally repulsive and there's no way you could eat them, that's already hefsed Oakland, and even Shmuel could agree that that's us. Now, we had a case of bardo, and you're talking about washing your face with something that beautifies a person. And l'chora, you were talking about a man. Man, is there some sort of iser of malbush noshim here? Memar amar sutra vashi aviyasvi. They were sitting together. Aisu l'kamayu birdo. So they brought this birdo in front of them. And as we said before, birdo is something that if it has a very significant volume of aloe in it, then it will remove the hair. That's birda. And Amem Ravashi Moshe, Rav Emar, and Ravashi, they had no problem using it for washing purposes as a kind of soap. And Marzutra lo Moshe, they saw that Marzutra was hesitant. He was inhibited. Omru Leh, so Amem Ravashi said to Marzutra, why aren't you using it? Lo Sover Leh Mar, don't you hold the Ha, the Omer Rav Sheshes, Birda Shari. And Rav Sheshes allowed this washing on Shabbos, and certainly it would be allowed during the week. Omru Rav Mordechai, who was a fourth Amora, who was apparently there, Bar Mine De Mar, don't derive anything from Marzutra. As far as the issue of Rav Sheshes is concerned, which is a Shabbos issue, about whether or not you're allowed to, is there a chash you might remove hair if you use this birda. But Marzutra had another issue, totally different issue. Afilu b'chol, nami lo svirle. He holds that we should not use this substance called birda, this concoction that removes hair even during the week. Because Savalek Iha Hadisanya, he holds like the Brisa of Megar Odom Gildei Tsoa, the Gildei Maka Shal Besoro Bishvil Tsaro. But in Bishvil Yapos, Osur. Which means that this Brisa tells us that you're allowed to take Gildei Tsoa, which are, he calls it Milmule Zeya Yaveshim, or Gilde Mako, which is a Krum Pitsoim Yaveshim, Shal Besoro. You're allowed to rub this off, scabs or so forth. Let's see if we can translate according to the English. He says to scrape crusts of filth, the crusts of a wound, I think it's kind of the covering of a scab upon his flesh because of tzaro. He's suffering from this. But if he's only doing this to beautify himself, that is forbidden. And this is based on a pasuk in Parshas Ki Teitze. It says, Lo yilbash gever simlas isha, which includes any sort of hisyapus, any sort of beautifying it that usually is done by the women. So Marzucha felt that to use birda is something that the women use, and it's a rechitza for the purpose of beautifying themselves. So now the Gemara says, V'yinu kiman savrua. What about Amemer and Ravashi? They had no hesitation, no inhibition to use this birda for rechitza. The Braisa doesn't mention any opinion that allows it. And the Gemara answers, Ki hada sanya, they hold like a different braisa, Rochitz Adam Ponov Yadav Ragel B'chol Yom Bishvil Kono, that it's recommended that a person wash his face and his hands and his feet on a daily basis, because man was created in Tzelem Elokim, Ki B'Tzelem Elokim Asas Adam, and when he respects and honors his body, he's basically being mechabed Elokim, his creator, because he's a tzel of Elokim. Mishum Shenevan, the Pasuk says, in Mishlei, kol Paul Hashem Limanehu, that all that Hashem wrought was for his sake, his with a capital H, for his glory. So keeping clean brings honor to God, because man was created in God's image. And one who sees a handsome creature has to bless God, Rashi says. That's based on a Sugyan Brachos, on Daf Nun Chesamid Beis. So they had no hesitation in washing with this kind of a soap, even though it's for Yipui, because that's a praise and an honor for God. That's not a violation of Lo Silbash. And the Talmidim of the Meiri quotes Talmidim who maintain that Mutal Garer Gildei Tsoa VeGildei Maka, and those crusts of a wound, the crusts of filth that you're allowed to rub off, he says, even Kidei Liapos Atzmo, not even if it's for Tsar. If he wants to look more beautiful amongst the Brios, more handsome, Shalis Ganolov, it's disgusting when they see him with all these crusts and wounds and so forth. It'll be a kind of a chilul Hashem. He's allowed to remove that, even for the sake of beauty. And the Rambam Perek Dal Milchus Tefila writes that before Tefila Shachris, a person should wash his face, his hands, and his feet. The Ravid writes that he doesn't know why he should have to wash his feet, and the Kesef Mishnah says that it's all based on our Gemara. The Rambam holds that the Braisa, which says Tzarech Lirchotz L'chovet Kono, would certainly apply before tefillah. And it mentions washing his feet as well. The Ravid holds that this braisa is not coming to talk about how to prepare for tefillah, but to set up a heter to allow you, permit you, to what you might thought might be a violation of Lo Yilbash, and it's not a violation of Lo Yilbash. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Kupa Mate al tzida v'notel shebeyitol. The Mishnah here at the beginning of this sugya records a machlokus between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim about the case of Atmona in Gizei Tzemer. So he insulated his hot pot of food in shearings of wool, and now he wants to, on Shabbos, remove the contents of this pot. Is mata al tzida v'notel. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he should tip over the box that's holding the tavshil, the kedera. So that's called a kupa. Kupa means the box. And it seems that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would not allow you to return the pot into this kupa after you emptied, or after you took out half or whatever percentage of its contents. The Chachamim say you're allowed to take it out and you're allowed to put it back in. So the Gemara now wants to analyze what is the machlokus about. Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Abchia Bar Ashi, Hakol Modim. Even the Chacham agreed to Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Sheim, if he took out the Kedera from the Kubav and his Kalkala Haguma, and now there's a cavity inside the box, an empty pot, and now the shearings of wool, they simply fall and they go down into the Kedera, is Osalach, so then you cannot put the pot back into the Kupa, because he's going to have to pick up the gizim, the shearings, and their mukta. And the Gemara asks the following kasha, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Chachamim Omrim, Notel, Chachamim, say you don't have to tip over the kupa, just simply take out your kedera from the kupa, while it's, you know, erect, while it's standing up as kufa, umachzir. Now that would imply that Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria holds that it's also lahachzir. So the Gemara now wants to clarify the Mishnah and ask the following question: Heichi dami, what is the case about which there's a machlokis tanoim? Idalon is kalkala aguma. If the cavity was not messed up, in other words, the shearings are still lined up on the sides of this kupa. Is Shapir Ka'amri Rabbanon? The Rabbanon are 100% correct that he should be able to put it back in. I mean, he's not moving the shearings because they're still located on the inner outskirts around the kupa. So he just simply replaces his tafshil exactly where it was before, and he's not moving mukta el alav. It must be a case where the chachama matir replacing the tafshil inside the kupa, afopinis kalkala guma, which means that even though the shearings fell down, and that's going to be the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Azaria, and that's against Rabbi Abba, because Rabbi Abba said that if this niskalkala guma, everybody agrees that you're not allowed to put it back. So the Gemara says, lo, there's no proof from the Mishnah that Chachamim would allow you to replace the kedera into the kupa in a case in this kalkala guma, if the shearings fell down into the cavity, into the hole of the kupa. But liolam delonis kalkala guma, the Mishnah is talking about a case where the shearings did not fall into the cavity, and that's why the Rabbanan allowed you to replace it. And even Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria would agree that once he takes out his pot, and if it's and he didn't do the hatoya, he didn't tilt it the way that he should have done, but he went ahead and he took it out straight away, and the shearings are still hanging there on the outside, alone is kalkala guma, that he's allowed to replace it. But hacha, our Mishnah is bechoshin kav miflegi. Can we allow him l'chatchila to take out his pot and remove it in the normal way without tilting it? Should we be choshesh? Should we be suspicious that maybe tiskalkel aguma? If we allow him to take out the pot, it could very well be the shearings will fall in; they'll collapse. Is marasav according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria? If we allow him to take out the kedera without tilting the entire business, but the kupa, the box is kufa, it's erect. Is choshen shemen is kalkel? Is kalkel tis kalkel? It means haguma, that the moment he picks it up, the shearings will fall in, and when he puts the kedera back in, then he's going to dig his hands into the cavity, into this guma, in order to lift up the gizim, the shearings. And it'll violate the Isur Tiltul Muktza. And therefore, let's require of him to do this removal of the pot in a very unusual way, which is called Atoy, by tilting it. But Marsav, the Chacham Holdein Choshin, we don't have to worry about the fact that the Guma will collapse, meaning that the shearings will collapse into the cavity of the Guma. And therefore, there's no reason to require that he take out his pot by Atoy. He could simply take it out in the normal way. And ve'aya, if in the worst case scenario, niskalkal aguma, then he certainly will be well educated. He'll be taught that he's not allowed to put the tavshil, the kedera, back in, because that would entail kilkul muktza. So we're up to Amar Rav Huna. Let's just make a note of where we got up to. Amar Rav Huna is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom of Daf Nun Amud Beis.